Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Mem Aleph. We are beginning today on Mem Amud Beis. We are about 15 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We're starting at the two dots with the words Rabbi Yossi Omer. This is going back to our Mishnah. We started yesterday the fifth parak of Sanhedrin. Fifth parak, short parak, but has a lot of yesodos in this parak regarding the examination of the Edim. And the Mishnah introduced us to the idea of chakiros. Chakiros are essential questions. The Mishnah told us that according to the Tanna Kamma, there are seven chakiros. There are seven essential questions that are asked. These questions really, even though their number are seven, but really can be reduced down to two basic points, and that is when and where. When did the crime happen, and where did the crime happen? These are formulated in seven different questions, and the Mishnah told us that according to the Tanna Kamma, these questions are, which Shemitah cycle is it? Which year was it? Which month was it? Which date of the month? Which day of the week? Which hour was it? And where did it take place? See, these are the seven chakiras. The Mishnah then went on to tell us that if one of the witnesses is unable to tell us any one of these answers to the seven chakiras, so then their aegis is no good, and we no longer have a case. Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah even further reduces questions to Eze Yom, Eze Shah, and Eze Malkum. Where did it, what day did it happen, what time did it happen, what place did it happen? So he too essentially also basically amounts to when and where did it happen. It's just that instead of asking in seven different questions, he asks it in three questions. The Gemara now is going to explain the machlokas between Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara starts off, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Tanya, the Gemara quotes, A Braisa Amalem, Rabbi Yossi, Lachachamim. So Rav Yossi says to the Chamim, according to you, Mishabav Amar Emesh Hargu. So let's say, for example, the court case was a day after the crime, and the witnesses come in and they say yesterday was the murder. So now the questions are which sabbatical cycle, and which year, and which month, and what date of the month. All of these questions now are perfectly superfluous. We already know the answers to these questions. So why would you ask questions that we know the answers to? So the Chachamim say back to Rav Yossi, well, let's go with your thought process. Let's imagine that the crime took place not yesterday, but today. It's unlikely, but under the possibility that the crime took place today and the court case took place today. So let me ask you a question. So now your questions become superfluous. Your first question, which day did it take place? What do you mean? If they come in and saying the crime took place today, we're not going to ask the witnesses now which day did it take place. We know what day it took place. So the Chachamim say in response to Rabbi Yossi, we're going to ask all those questions, and even if we know the answer to these questions, we're still going to ask these questions, and it's based on the idea of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was already introduced to us earlier in the Masechta, and it's the idea that we want to ask questions to the Edim, even if they may be superfluous. But remember, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said that in order to intimidate the witnesses and to tire them out, and hopefully to get the most honest report from the Edim, so we're going to walk them from place to place, and we will do so that by the time they're testifying, they're going to be worn down, and they'll hopefully be even more honest. Here, too, they know the answers to these questions already, but still, the idea is that we're going to tire them out with additional questions, even if they are unnecessary, even if we all know the answer to them already, but we're going to tire them out with questions, so hopefully they're going to report and they're going to give us a good answer. So Chachamim said, Rav Yossi, so that's how we feel. Meaning, even if we know which Shemitah cycle it is, and which year it was, and which month it was, we have all this information already, but we're still going to ask these questions. Rav Yossi, now the Gemara here goes back to the Shita of Rav Yossi. What's Rav Yossi going to say in his defense? So Rav Yossi says, look, the likelihood is that the case is taking place at least a day after the event, after the crime. So the idea that we're going to ask them which day it was is most likely going to be a necessary question. But the questions that the Chachamim ask about the sabbatical year, sabbatical cycle, and the year, so those questions are most of the time not necessary and therefore do not need to be asked. We are continuing in the Gemara. We're on the very bottom of Mem Amud Beis. We are six lines from the bottom. The Gemara now continues with a discussion of the questions that we're asking the Edim. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes, Abraisa Makir Nasa Atem Oso. Nachir Harag Yisrael Harag. Was the victim a non-Jew or was the victim a Jew? We know the halach is that when a Yisrael kills a Nachri, so he's not Chayv Misa. So it's important to know whether or not the identity of the victim was a Yisrael or a Nachri. He tartan bo kiba alav asro. Hitra atzma lemisa. And then the questions of, did you provide a warning? Did he accept the warning? Did he recognize and actually articulate that he understands what the ramifications of this crime is going to be? Those are the necessary requirements in order for a person to be put to death, and so we are going to ask the Edim whether or not all this occurred. Hemes Besoch De Dibor. On top of that, the crime has to take place pretty much right after he accepted upon himself the Hasra and the consequences of his actions. It has to be done Besoch De Dibor. However, Avad Azar Esmi Avad Lepa'or Avad Lemarkalus Avad. And if this is a case of Avad Azar, we're going to ask, do you know which Avodah Zarah he was actually worshipping? Was it Pa'or or was it Markalus? Uva Me'avad. And exactly how was the Avodah Zarah taking place? The Gemara over here goes over the four Avodahs which a person is going to be chayv in Avodah Zarah. He's going to be chayv misa in Avodah Zarah. Even if it's not typically the way the Avodah Zarah is worshipped, still he's going to be chayv misa. If you shecht an animal, if you burn the animal for the Avodah Zarah, or nisuch, or ishtachava, or if you pour some sort of nesach in front of the Avodah Zarah, or if you bow in front of the Avodah Zarah, these are the dollar Avodahs which have done in front of an Avodah Zarah. And even if this is not the normal way the Avodah Zarah is worshipped, still the person is going to be subject to Misa. So these are all basic questions that we're going to be asking the Edim. Amar Ula Minayin L'Asra Min HaTorah. And now the Gemara is going to cite sources. Where do we know that there is a requirement to give Asra? Where in the Torah do we find it? Shenema, the Gemara is going to cite four different sources in the Torah where we have this idea of Asra. The first source comes in Parshas Kedoshim. The Gemara quotes the pasuk v'isha sheyikach es achoso basavivo basimo v'ra'a es ervasa. So if a man takes his sister, and then the Torah describes, and he sees the erva, ata b'ri'ah, talya milsa. Now the actual avera itself is not the ri'ah, it's the actual bia. So why does the Torah frame it as a ri'ah? El ad shir uhu tamo shol davar. What we have to do is we have to show him that this is asr. I mean, show him this is asr, meaning explain to him that it's asr. In other words, provide a warning to the person that the person understands that what he's about to do is asr. Eino eino lekaris. Now, the punishment for erva, for arayas is karis, but obviously, for Kares, we don't need Hasra. Kares is given out by Kares Baruch Hu. Kares Baruch Hu knows whether or not the person did so b'shogeg or b'mezid. So obviously, the Hasra mentioned over here is not regarding Kares. So obviously, since we can't apply it to Kares, we're going to apply it to Malkus. In other words, if a person is Mizana with his, not Mizana, but if a person has Arias, violates Arias with his sister, and he does so b'mezid with Edim, so he will be subject to the Malkus penalty. The Bechizki Atana, the Gemara quotes, second source, V'chi Yazid Ish Al Re'ehu La'argo Ba'arama. Second source in the Torah comes from Parshas Mishpatim. It talks about the crime of murder. So the Gemara says, Sheyesru Bo V'aydain Hu Mezid. Now the Torah uses the word V'chi as if to say that he knows that it's Asr. Well, how does he know that it's Asr? So presumably he knows it's Asr because Asra was given. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, the Gemara is going to give a third source now. Hamotze'im Oso Mikoshesh Eitzim. So we find that he was gathering wood. Gemara gives a couple of pshatim exactly what he did wrong, but let's just assume for now that he was gathering wood. So one of the malachas of Shabbos was Ma'amir. So the Torah, the way the Torah describes it is mikoshesh, that he was gathering in the present state. What does that mean, he was gathering? So shehisru b'vaydainu mikoshesh, meaning that he was given a warning and still he's going to be gathering. So again, another source in the Torah that Hasra is required, and the Gemara now provides a fourth source, Debei Rabbi Tana. The Gemara quotes in the yeshiva of Rebbe, al dvar asher ina al iske dibur. A person has relations with a Nara Amarasa, so the Torah says al Devar, but we're going to darshan it al Iske Dibor, meaning there was a communication. What kind of communication are we talking about? So in the context of our Gemara, we mean the Hasra that was provided, that was given to the perpetrator before he had relations with the Nara Amarasa, so he was warned that it's an Isra in the Torah. So we have four sources that the Gemara quotes in terms of what the source for Hasra would be. Utsrich, and the Gemara points out that all four of these sources are necessary. So if we only have the first source regarding one sister, Hasra is needed, but Hasra is needed for Malkus. But for something that requires a harsh or onish like a capital crime, so I might have thought that no Hasra would be needed. The Svar probably would be that if it's a harsher crime, So there's no warning. In other words, these are much more serious crimes, and presumably everybody knows that's us. So, but because we have no source, so I would have thought the Havamina would have been that there's no Hasra that's required. So the Gemara says that's why we have the second source. Second source is telling us that even a capital crime, there is a requirement of Hasra. To kill. So I might have thought that we're talking about murder. The onish for murder is skila. Sorry, incorrect. say correctly, the onish for murder is saif, it's decapitation, which in terms of the pecking order of Chayv and Mrs. Beis Din, so that is lower on the list. Skila and Srefa are above it. So Aval Skila de Chamur Emela, but if I only had with the source regarding murder, so I would not necessarily know that there's a Hasra that's required by Skila. So Tzricha, so the Gemara says, so that's why I need sources 3 and 4, but the Gemara still needs to explain. I would only need one source regarding Skila. Why do I have two sources regarding Skila? The Gemara goes on to explain. V'tartab niskal lamali. Why do I have two sources as it relates to Skila? The Rabbi Shimon lasu and Israf. And so according to Rabbi Shimon, it's coming to include Srefa, because remember, we say time and again that Rabbi Shimon, in terms of how he puts the hierarchy of Mises Beis Din, he puts Srefa above Skila. So if I only had a source by Skila, so I would not know Srefa, because Srefa is above it. So the second source, im eino inyan, if it doesn't apply towards Skila, because I already have a pasuk regarding Skila, so then I'll apply it to Srefa. L'Rabbanan, and now according to the Chacham, Skila is number one. So once I have a source by Skila, so then I can learn through Kav Vachomer that just like I need a Hasra by Skila, I would need a Hasra by any of the Misos that are lesser than that. But still, Milsadasi, but Kav Vachomer Torah v'Kasav Lakra. Even though, yes, a Kav Vachomer could arrive me to this conclusion, but still the Torah goes out of its way to write it out anyway. And here, probably the idea is that when we have a Kav Vachomer can result in a halacha, but a Kav Vachomer can also be questioned, can be challenged. Once I have a pasuk emphasizing the point, so then no longer is it subject to any kind of pircha. We can't ask on the Kav Vachomer anymore. So the Gemara says, well, once we're here, why doesn't the Torah just simply give me the requirement of Hasra by Skila? And from there, we'll understand that once there's a Hasra that's required by the most harshest of all punishments, which is Skila, so then a Hasra was certainly going to be needed by all the lesser punishments as well. And the Gemara's approach over here is similar to what we just said, in that Enachinami, a Kav Vachomer would have worked and would have been sufficient, but again, the Torah goes out of its way to write it out, to spell it out, and not leave it up to a Kav Vachomer. Again, the idea is a Kav Vachomer can be upended. So we have Psukim, and the Psukim, therefore, spell it out with no equivocation whatsoever. Hitar Asma Lamisa, we're up to the next part of the Gemara. The Gemara says that not only is a Hasra need to be issued, but the person who's about to commit the Avera also has to acknowledge that he heard the Hasra. Minalan Amarav, Evite Mechizke Amakro, Yumas Hameis. The Torah, in describing the Hasra that was given, so you put the dead person to death. Strange lashon, and the Gemara goes on to explain how she'atir atzmo lamisa, meaning he has to show an understanding that he is going to be put to death. So there has to be an acknowledgement on the part of the Avaryan that he actually heard the Hasra. Amar of Chanan, Eidinar Amarasa Shuhuzmu Einer Ragin. The Gemara over here gives us a halacha, which goes as follows. Let's say you have witnesses who are testifying regarding a case of Nara Amarasa. So a man is having relations with a woman who is undergone the first stage of marriage, which effectively means she's a married woman. And the witnesses are then proven to be Edom Zomamim, meaning they weren't telling the truth, but rather they were conspiring to kill her. So Rav Chanan gives us a very big chiddush, and that is that they, the Edom themselves, are Inan Neheragim. The Edom are not killed. Why? Because their counter-argument could be is that, look, we did testify about this woman that she committed an act of niyuf. She committed adultery. Yes, that's true. However, what was the purpose of our testimony? We didn't want to get her killed, but rather what we wanted her to do was to become usher to her husband. We know that once a woman commits adultery, so usher labal the usher labal, she will be usher to two people. She'll be usher to the man that she had an extramarital affair with, and she'll be usher to her husband as well. So what these Edom can say is, in their defense, look, we didn't want to have her killed, but rather all we wanted to do is just make her usher to her husband. So this is a very big chiddush by Rav Chanan, and as a result of that, they themselves, the Edom Zomamim, are not going to be killed. V'ha asru ba, so the Gemara says, but I don't understand. In the context of the Gemara that we just learned together, this of course makes no sense. We just learned that in order for Edom to be Edom, they must provide Hasra. Now, in the Hasra that they're giving, so they are ostensibly warning the woman, don't commit adultery, because if you commit adultery, you will be put to death. So how can their defense be, oh, we don't want to kill her, as Edim, they must provide a warning, and the part of that warning is a very clear communication to the woman that she herself is going to be put to death. So then how can they say afterwards, oh, we didn't want her to die? So the Gemara says, Delo Asra Beis. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about a case where they didn't provide Asra. V'ilo Asra Ba'hech Migdala. Gemara asks the obvious question, well, if they didn't give Asra, so how could they themselves not then be killed? Sorry, let me say that better. If they didn't give a warning, how could she not be killed? Meaning, without a warning, we just learned together that the culprit themselves can't be put to death. So the Gemara provides an answer. So the Gemara says, well, it could very well be that their defense would be a good defense, and they didn't give Asra, and she would still be subject to Misa if we subscribe to the opinion of Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda says that if you have a knowledgeable person, either man or woman, so no Asra is given. The Gemara quotes the Braisa D'Tanya. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, Omer Chaver, Ein Tzarech Asra, L'Fishal, Nitna Asra, Ela, L'Havchim, Mishogig, L'Mezit. According to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, if you have somebody who you know is knowledgeable and knows the halacha, so then no Hasra needs to be given. Why not? Because the whole purpose of Hasra is to know whether or not the person is doing so knowing that the Torah asks it, or is doing it just simply out of ignorance. When you have a chaver, we never have this question. A chaver, we assume, knows the halacha, and as a result of knowing the halacha, is never subject to this question of, was he doing so out of ignorance, or was he doing so with the knowledge? We assume he's doing so with the knowledge, and alfa pikin, he's doing it anyway. So according to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, anytime you have a chaver, or in this case a chavira, so no hasra needs to be issued. So now, here's our case. Our case is that the woman in question, who is about to perform niyuf, she's about to commit adultery, she is a chavera. No warning needs to be given, so therefore these edim didn't provide the warning because no warning is necessary. And now, in the event that these edim are found to be edim zomimim, so they themselves now can argue on their own defense that they shouldn't be killed because they weren't planning on killing her. And what about the hasra? No hasra was given. The Gemara asks the next question, which is the next logical question. Wait 1 second. If the Edom Zomimim themselves are not going to be killed for their defense of we weren't intending on killing her, well, how can we then kill her? This is not Edush Yachol Lazima. Edush Yachol Lazima Lo Shema Edus. Meaning, Edus by its very definition means it can only be an Edus when you do to them what they conspire to do to the alleged criminal. In this case over here, I can't kill the alleged criminal. And if I can't kill the alleged criminal, I can't kill the Edom Zomimim. So, and it also works in the reciprocal. If I can't kill the Edom Zomimim, so I can't kill the criminal as well. So the Gemara is basically bothered by, we can't have it going both ways. You can't have a situation where the Edom Zomimim have a possible defense to get them out of the death penalty, but at the very same time, in the very same case, you can have the potential victim being put to death in the same scenario. So the Gemara says it simply doesn't work. So Hachinami Kamar. So the Gemara says, so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to revisit the statement of Rav Hanan and just bring it to now its proper conclusion, which is Mitoch Shein Ne'erag and Shechon Lomer Los Rabbalabano Afhi Eina Ne'erag Esavile Edushiyato Chalazima. So the Gemara says exactly. So because we can't put them to death, because they have the proper defense of we didn't intend on having her put to death, we only wanted her to become usher to her husband, and no warning was given because she was a chaver, no warning is necessary. And because of all this, so we're also going to say that in this very same case, in the event that they're not Edim Zomimim, and really the case now is going on her, in such a scenario we will not be able to put her to death since we couldn't put the Edim Zomimim to death as well. That's exactly what Rav Hanan means. So Ella be Isha Chaver de Kaimalan de Mikala Ali but Rav Yosef Rabbechina and Hech Mishkachala. So then the Gemara says, well, if all this is true, so are we ever going to have a case according to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda where a woman is about to commit niyuf and she's going to be put to death? Meaning, if our position is correct and our logic is correct, so then according to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, you will never have an Isha Chavera being subject to the death penalty when she's committing niyuf. And again, the way the logic works is that since the witnesses themselves cannot be put to death because their argument is we only wanted her to become usher to her husband, we didn't want her to die. So since the maximum penalty we can give to the Edom is not the death penalty, so then we're going to also have to say the maximum penalty to the woman is not the death penalty. Are we ever going to have a case of a death penalty when it comes to an Isha Chavera? And the Gemara is basically saying it is it's untenable to suggest, it's impossible to suggest that we're just simply not going to have a death penalty for an Isha Chavera, meaning there has to be some scenario in which an Isha Chavera can be put to death. So the Gemara constructs the following scenario, Kishizinsa v'chazur v'zinsa. So the Gemara says that this is not the first time she's committing adultery, this is now the second time she's committing adultery, which now means that the first time she became usur to her husband. So when these witnesses now are testifying that she committed adultery a second time, so there's only one more consequence that can be given to her, notably that she is going to be put to death. So the Gemara says, no, even if this is the second case of adultery, could we not make the argument, could the Edom not make the argument, oh, why are we here? Why are we testifying about her second adultery? That's to usher her to her second boa. So the Gemara says, Shizinsa Mibol Rishon. So the Gemara says that she was Mizane from the first Boa. So the Gemara constructs now a scenario in which it is a second case of adultery, but it is with the same Boa. So now, the only thing these Edom are trying to accomplish in their testimony is to give her the death penalty. This would be a scenario, albeit limited, but this would be the scenario in which you can have a case of a no-ephes who is going to be put to death according to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda in the scenario of an Isha Chavera. Inami Shezinta Mekrova, or the Gemara constructs another scenario in that the Boel in question over here is somebody she's related to, so she's already usher to him. So now, again, why are they providing testimony? The only reason why they're providing testimony is to have her being put to death. So the Gemara says one last question on this chiddush of Rav Chanan. Rav Chanan says that if you have Edom Zomim who are coming on to a, who are testifying about Nara Marasa, so because of their argument of we didn't intend to kill her, but rather just to simply have her asked to her husband, so they themselves are not going to be put to death. Question, why are they talking about a case of Nara Marasa? That's super specific. Meaning, why not just talk about a, excuse me, why not just talk about a regular case of a married woman? So the Gemara says, Ela afilo haidalo yasfa tuse yechom laomar laosra abalabanim. So the Gemara says, no, here it's actually even a little bit more of a chiddush. Why? Because in this particular scenario, Nara Marasa, she only went through the first stage of marriage, which means that she has not yet been with her husband. She's married, but she has not yet been with her husband. So now when the Edom Zomim are saying in their own defense, oh, we didn't want to have her killed, we just wanted to usher her and her husband. The truth of the matter is that even though that's an argument here, it's not as strong an argument. Because she and her husband, although they're married, haven't lived together as husband and wife. And so for the Edom now to say, oh, we wanted to break up the marriage, they're married, but they're not fully married. And so maybe, the Gemara is suggesting as a Havamina, so maybe I would have thought that the argument now really loses all of its weight and all of its power. And I might have thought that under these circumstances, maybe the only explanation of their testimony is so that she would be put to death. Even in such a scenario, we're still going to say, in defense of the Edom Zomimim, that no, that the purpose of their Edus is just simply to usher her onto her husband. Amar Rav Chista. So after providing now a big chiddush in the name of Rav Chanan, in the case of a no-ephes, the Gemara now gives us another chiddush as well, in the name of Rav Chista. Echad Amar B'Saif Ha'Hargo, V'Echad Amar Barir and Harago Ein Zenachan. Let's say you have a discrepancy between the two aid, and one aid says that there was a murder, and it took place with a knife. The second aid comes and says that there was a murder. He says, but the murder weapon was some other instrument. Rashi gives an old French name for it. It's something like a spear. But he's describing clearly some other different type of murder weapon. So, Ein Zenachon, it is not correct. Meaning, we learned the Rashi earlier. The Gemara here is borrowing from the Pasuk, meaning it's just simply incompatible. It's not correct that they are describing two different murder weapons. Again, this is a murder case. The murder weapon is such a critical component of the crime. And by virtue of the fact that you have these two witnesses who are describing two different murder weapons, so we cannot align these two testimonies and we do not have a case against the alleged criminal. However, if they're arguing about the color of the clothing that's worn by the criminal, by the victim, so that's fine. Meaning even though that what they're describing now is something peripheral to the crime itself, because it's not essential to the crime itself, even though there was a discrepancy between these two Edim, so that's okay. In other words, it would, of course, have been better had they been able to coordinate regarding some of these peripheral details of the case, but still, it's not going to disqualify the Edim. Meis Fei the Gemara now, after saying over the Chiddush of Chista, is going to significantly challenge this based on a number of brises that we are going to see together. Nachon Shehei, Nachon Echad Omer B'Sayef. Sorry, the brisa starts off with quoting the pasuk nachon, meaning the testimony has to be correct. And by correct, what do we mean by that? Shia hei nachon. Echad amar b'sayif harugav, echad amar baririn harugav, echad amar keil shchon, echad amar keil levanim, ein ze nachon. If there's a discrepancy, either regarding the murder weapon or regarding the color of the clothing, where one says white and the other one says black, this is not a qualification of nachon. This does not satisfy the requirement of nachon, and therefore the testimony is going to be thrown out. Clearly from this brisa, it seems that even a discrepancy in terms of the color of clothing is going to be incompatible. So Tirgama Rav Chista Besuda Shechan Kubo, Dehainu Saya Varirin. So the Gemara says, well, the way we could say over the brisa very simply is that we're talking about where the murder was done with the handkerchief itself. And the question that they're asking is the color of the handkerchief either black or white? This is now a murder weapon, and that's why this is a critical question. And a discrepancy in terms of color of this is tantamount to two witnesses arguing over whether it was a knife or whether it was a spear. Tashmadik Mark quotes another brisa. Echad amar sandalav shchorim ve'echad amar sandalav levanim ein ze nachon. One witness says that the shoe color was black, and the other one says that the shoe color of the murderer was white. So this also does not satisfy the requirement of nachon, and therefore the testimony is going to be thrown out. Again, the Gemara says that what we could do with this brisa is say that the shoe in question was used as part of the murder. In fact, the murder was done through kicking. He kicked the person to death, and therefore the question in terms of the color of the shoes becomes now a critical question, tantamount to asking in terms of the murder weapon itself. Tashma, the Gemara quotes another brisa, Maiso Vadak Ben Zakkai Be'ukse Te'ina. Now, this is not a brisa, actually. This is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah quotes in the name of Ben Zakkai that they asked a question regarding the fig tree. Now, the fig tree presumably was just simply a background to the crime, meaning it happened. The crime itself happened under the fig tree, and they were asking about the nature of the fig tree. So, and Ben Zakkai was asking these types of questions, and the way that we're understanding the Mishnah is that if there are different answers given to this question, so that will throw out the testimony. This goes against Rav Chista, because Rav Chista says that if it's a background item and it is ancillary and it is not essential to the crime itself, so even though the witnesses are giving different answers, but that is not going to throw out the testimony. So the Gemara suggests that, well, maybe over here in question, the case of the fig tree is that he actually plucked the fig tree out on Shabbos, and so therefore the fig tree now is an essential portion of the crime itself. We're talking about Chilul Shabbos, and we're talking about taking the fig tree out of the ground, and so therefore it is not a tangential question, but it is essential to the crime itself. V'atanya amar lo tachas teina haragu. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa here clearly says that the crime in question is not Chilul Shabbos, but the crime was actually murder, and it took place under the fig tree. Ela amar amin barchama kigon sheshivto b'yichud shel teina. So the Gemara says, well, we could suggest that over here the actual tree itself, the branch itself, was used as the murder weapon. He stabbed the person with the fig tree, and now this becomes a murder weapon, and this would be a excellent defense of Rav Chista. The only problem is that we have another brisa. Tashma, the Gemara says, "Amar lahem teina zu okseh dakan okseh gasin teinim shecharos veteinim levanos." Now, in this brisa, we're talking about the actual fig itself. Were the figs black or were the figs white? Now, the figs themselves clearly were not the murder weapon. He didn't kill them by fig. So clearly, in this brisa, the figs were just simply a background to the crime itself. And still, the brisa says that these are questions which are, if given different answers to these questions by the two witnesses, so the testimony is going to be thrown out. And once again, this is going to significantly challenge the position of Rav Chista. Elam Rav Yosef mi ben Zakkai lusav inish. So Rav Yosef says, in defense of Rav Chista, well, what are we doing right now? We're asking a question against Rav Chista from the Shita of Ben Zakkai. Shana Ben Zakkai, the Bedikos Kechakir's Mashvila. So the Gemara says, as far as Ben Zakkai is concerned, his position is that Bedikos are tantamount to Chakiros, meaning that as far as Ben Zakkai was concerned, he had a fundamental shita which we don't necessarily follow. Ben Zakkai is of the opinion that even though it's a bedika and they're non-essential questions, but if you're given two different answers by the two different witnesses on these non-essential questions, he will treat them like chakiros, and therefore he's going to throw out the testimony. But the Chachamim don't agree with Ben Zakkai, and the Chachamim say that the only time that the testimony is going to be thrown out is only if there's a discrepancy on a chakira, but not on a bedika. So the Gemara says that even though, yes, you're right, Ben Zakkai clearly was talking about a murder case, and the figs in question were clearly not part of the crime itself. But that doesn't necessarily go against Rav Chista. Rav Chista would just simply say that I don't fundamentally hold like Ben Zakkai. I hold like the Chachamim who disagree with Ben Zakkai. Not Ben Zakkai. The Gemara now is going to address a simple question, and that is, who is the identity of this Ben Zakkai? Ilei Merav Yochem Ben Zakkai. So the Gemara says, well, presumably, the Ben Zakkai over here is a reference to Rav Yochem Ben Zakkai, but it's not going to work for a couple of reasons. The Gemara gives the first reason in terms of why it is probably not Rav Yochem Ben Zakkai. Mihavi B'Sanhedrin, because we're obviously talking about a capital crime, and was Rav Yochem Ben Zakkai around at the time where Sanhedrin would be trying a capital crime? V'hatanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Kol shnosof shel Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai me'avasim shana. The lifespan of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai took us through 120 years. Arba'im shana asak b'prakmashya mem shana lamad, arba'im shana limeit. And his life can be divided into thirds. The first third of his life, he was involved in business. Second third of his life, he was learning Torah. And the third third of his life, the last 40 years of his life, limeit, he was teaching Torah. Which means that only in the last third of his life can we envision that he was actually a member of the Sanhedrin. And on top of that, we also have another Mesorah, which is that for the last 40 years of the Beis HaMikdash, prior to its destruction, the Sanhedrin was sent and exiled in Chanos. And this Mesorah is telling us that for the last 40 years of the Beis HaMikdash, they were not judging punitive cases. No, that's not true. Dina Knassos were judged even after Chorban Beis HaMikdash. As long as you have Dayanam Mumchim, you could judge cases of Knassos. What it means is that they didn't judge capital crimes. Vitzanan. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, Hizkin Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And we also know that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai enacted. So here, let's put everything together. All the information that we just learned together, let's put it all together. What basically we have now learned is that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was living after Chorban Bayis. We also know that he was a member of Sanhedrin for the last 40 years of his life. We also know that for the last 40 years of the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis Din did not judge capital cases. So even if the Takana of Yochanan ben Zakkai took place in, let's imagine, the last year of him serving on the Sanhedrin, but still that means that for the last 40 years they were not judging capital cases. So this Ben Zakkai that we just described in our Mishnah, we've been just been discussing for the last little bit in our Gemara, it can't be Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai because the Sanhedrin was not judging capital cases for the last 40 years of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's life, and so he would not be involved in such a case. Ela ben Zakkai de'alma. So the Gemara finally concedes, the Gemara says, you're right. So it has to be some other ben Zakkai, not Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, but somebody else whose father's name was Zakkai. Hachinam and Mestarben, the Gemara points out that this makes sense because Yisak Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai Karele Rebbe ben Zakkai. And the Gemara points out for a second reason also, it makes sense to suggest that it's not Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai because Rebbe, when referring to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, meaning Rebbe, the Masada of our Mishnah, when referring to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, would not just simply be referring to him as ben Zakkai. That's not respectful. He was a Nazi of the Jewish people. So again, another piece of evidence which seemed to indicate that the identity of the Ben Zakkai in the Mishnah is not Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, but some other Ben Zakkai. The Hatanya, the Gemara says, all this makes a lot of sense, but the Gemara says, we have a Brisa. Maisa Ubadak Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai Bukse Te'inim. So the Brisa tells us that it was, in fact, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So now that we know through the Brisa that there was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, we basically have two issues that we have to deal with. Number one, the chronological issue, that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai did not live while he was a Dayan in a time where the Sanhedrin would be trying a capital crime. And furthermore, the second issue, why would Rabbi Yehuda Nasi be referring to him just simply as Ben Zakkai? So the Gemara really answers both of these questions with one simple solution. Ella, Talmud Ayoshev Lifnei Rabo Hava. So the Gemara says that really he was a student sitting in front of his Rebbe at the time. Meaning that it is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and it was at a time when the Sanhedrin was judging capital crimes. And yes, it's true, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was not a dayan at that point yet in his life. He was just learning Torah. But as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and the Gemara now is proposing that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, at this time while he was learning Torah, while he was a Talmud, so he was in the court, and he was sitting in the courtroom in order to learn about the judicial process and about Dayanus. V'amra milsa mistabra l'utayma. And then, while being a Talmud, he said something which was intelligent, which was reasonable. We turn now to the top of Mem Aleph Amud Beis, v'kavua bishmei. And it was so good that they said over the halacha in his name. The Rashkan, the very top of the Amud, v'haida karele b'chada masitzim ben zaka v'chada rami yocham ben zaka lo tikshe. Now, what about the discrepancy about the fact that in one place they refer to him as ben zaka, and in another place they refer to him as rami yocham ben zakai? So Rashi points out that's not difficult. Man de karele ben zakai al shem ha'ishaita de amr l'hamilsa. The one who described him as ben zakai was describing him at the time when he said when he made the svara as a talmud, and they referred to him back then as Ben Zakkai. Manda Karele Rav Yochanan Rabban Al Shem Sofei Karele, and the brisa that was describing as Rabban, well, that brisa was describing him, but only post facto, meaning in retrospect, meaning at the time he wasn't Rabban, but the Masadr of the Brisa, who was writing at a later point in time, was referring to Rabban, because at the time of the writing of the Brisa, he was Rabban, so he referred to him as he is now, not as he was at the time. Back to the Gemara. Ki hava lamed ben Zakkai hava karele ketamid yoshel fifnei rabu. Ki hava limed hava karele Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And that is presumably what the Gemara means, like we just saw in the Rashi. That the one Brisa describing him as ben Zakkai was describing him at the time, and the one who was describing him as Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was describing him at a point later on, even though at the time he, of course, was ben Zakkai. So that is the Gemara's solution that solves both of our problems, meaning the chronological issue and the fact that he was in one brisa referred to as Ben Zakkai and as the other brisa referred to as Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So we have gone over the sources in the Torah for Hasra. There are four different sources in terms of where Hasra comes from. The Gemara finds a Tzrichusa, the need for all these four sources. Hitar Asma Lamisa, the Gemara finds a source that the Avrayan also has to acknowledge and accept the Hasra that was given to him. Gemara taught us the Chiddush of Rav Hanan that in the case of Niyuf, when a man testifies, when two men testify regarding a woman committing adultery, so although it's a capital crime, but it won't necessarily be under certain circumstances that neither the Edom nor the Noefes herself is going to be put to death, because the claim could be made that the only reason why they're testifying is just to Aser al-Bola. But to be fair, this only goes according to the Shita of Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, which we don't follow. The Gemara brings in another Chiddush out of Rav Chista, making a very sharp distinction between questions that are related to the crime itself versus background information. If the questions are related to the crime and there is a discrepancy between the two Edim regarding the actual crime itself and things that are used towards the crime, like the crime weapon, so a discrepancy will allow us to throw out the testimony. However, discrepancy between the Edom regarding background, so that is not going to be a postal, that won't disqualify the Edus. Ben Zakkai of our Mishnah seems to be going against that Shita, and the Gemara acknowledges finally at the end that yes, Ben Zakkai is in fact going against the Shita. When Ben Zakkai was asking about figs and the color of figs, whether the figs were white or black, so clearly these are background questions. These are not essential to the actual crime itself, but still Ben Zakkai throughout the testimony, if in the event these Edim did not coordinate even on these tangential issues, but the Gemara points out in defense of Rav Chista that Rav Chista was just simply saying that this is Shita's Ben Zakkai, and he doesn't follow Shita's Ben Zakkai, he follows the Shita of the Chachamim. Although I'll add just one other point of interest, and that is that when Ben Zakkai did say this over in the Sanhedrin at the time, even though he wasn't a Dayan, he was a Talmud, but they did elevate him, and they did take his position and seemingly use his position. So it's an interesting defense of the Gemara when the Gemara says that Rav Chista doesn't hold the Ben Zakkai, meaning Rav Chista doesn't hold the Ben Zakkai, but meanwhile, the Sanhedrin who was operating at the time, so they did follow a sheet. So that in and of itself also requires a little more understanding and a lot more analysis.